one other senator supporting me.
I am the only candidate.
So I think he can be very formidable.
This is the Political Geek.
And welcome to the Political Geek. Thank you for being with us. We're glad to have you with us as we do this first version via Blog Talk Radio. I've tried to do the podcast just individually in the past, but this time we decided we'd do something a little different. I'm running into... This is fun. I've never had a technical difficulty where I've ended up with the headset cord draped completely around me like a snake. But it's kind of where we're at this moment in time. That's what happens when you have a swivel chair. And there we go. I think now we're all assembled. There we go. So we're glad to have you with us. This is our weekly discussion of what's going on, and we like to call this this particular episode the Talk Soup episode, because it's our opportunity to take a look at what was going on this week. One of the big things this week that I think was influencing everybody was the big uproar over the planned speech next Tuesday by President Obama. And for those of you who aren't aware, President Obama is expected to make a speech on Tuesday that will be put by satellite and will be available for about 15 to 20 minutes for the president to speak to high school and junior high kids. He'll be speaking from a high school in Virginia, according to the U.S. Department of Education. Now, they say he'll challenge them to work hard, to set educational goals, and take responsibility for their learning. But what some parents have said is that this is really just a subterfuge for the Obama administration attempting to, shall we say, indoctrinate students into what the administration is wanting in various things. And they looked at the Department of Education actually produced a course guide for this, which had some people in a bit of an uproar. And there have been a lot of school districts in the state of Iowa that have had already calls from parents raising questions about the president's planned national address. In Illinois, Minnesota, Texas, Virginia, and Wisconsin, some districts have decided not to show the speech or use the study materials that were put out by the administration. And districts in Iowa kind of doing the same thing. In Norwalk, the teachers will not be showing the speech live. What's going to happen is the school officials will download it from the White House website, and the teachers will be allowed to use excerpts. The idea being they'll have the chance to look at it first before really allowing anybody to take part in it. Not probably a bad idea. What do you think about all of this? We invite you to participate in this call, this program, and the number for you to call in is 347-633-9700. Again, that's 347-633-9700. Our show ID is 686-060, and you can be a part of all of this. Of course, you can also go into our chat room and talk to us as well. Busy day as far as the Sunday political talks were concerned, and one of the biggest things, of course, as we mentioned, was that the president's speech as far as education is concerned. Here's how they were talking about it on Meet the Press today in their roundtable discussion. You might find this slightly enlightening as they chat about what went on and what they think was the big deal about the president's speech. Again, this is from Meet the Press today, if indeed my equipment will cooperate with me today. Doesn't seem that it wants to. We'll try it another way. Okay, let's see.
The other speech the president planned to give on Tuesday was an education speech. The students coming back from their summer break, and he wanted to talk about studying hard. We brought it up with David Axelrod. Well, this has created such a firestorm. Here's the New Canaan Public Schools writing a parent letter, and in it they say this: in developing their plans, our principals have considered issues such as developmental appropriateness, curricular relevance, the time at which the speech is being broadcast, and the importance of teachers assuming responsibility for the selection of instructional materials. In elementary schools, the administration and faculty will view the speech, download it, and after discussing it, make decisions regarding how it might be used in the future, including deciding its appropriateness for various grade levels. Parents will be notified if and when the decision to show the speech is made. Tom Brokaw, talk about tortured language. What's going on?
Signs of the apocalypse. Really.
I mean, it's stunning to me. I come from a time and a place in America where it would be thrilling to have a president of the United States address your school about the importance of studying and staying in school. And this president, whatever else you think about his political philosophy, is a symbol of working hard, coming from difficult circumstances, and getting to where he is in part because of education. I think it's so ripe for satire. It's unbelievable. The superintendent of the Gettysburg Public School System said today that they have devised a plan for students to be shielded from President Abraham Lincoln, who will be coming to make an address. Look, that is the most tortured thing I can possibly imagine, what we just read there. It sounds like East Germany trying to form some restrictions on people leaving the eastern sector to go into the western sector. I think it's perfectly appropriate for parents to say, I don't want my child to hear that. I would rather keep them out or put them in a different school that day. But this is completely out of control, in my judgment. And it's not partisan. I mean, if, when I was a student or when my children were in school, if it had been Dwight Eisenhower or John Kennedy or Lyndon Johnson or Bill Clinton or Ronald Reagan or George Bush, the idea of hearing a president of the United States saying, we should study hard and that's how we advance and we all need to get in on this, I think is an appropriate message.
Mayor Giuliani, you ran for president. And one of the things that I've noticed in my experience covering a Republican president, George W. Bush, is the lack of respect for the institution of the presidency. Whether it's people saying during Bush's time, hey, he's not my president. Well, no, yes, he is. Does that trouble you?
Yes, it does. Tom is right. But the difference is we looked at President Eisenhower, President Reagan, even up to about that point, even President Bush, 41, differently. There's a lack of respect for the president. There's a lack of respect for politicians. And David Axelrod said, well, this isn't politics. Politics, for better or worse. And I think that's what you're seeing. You're seeing people distrust the president's motives or the administration's motives. It's not just about the speech. It's about the lesson plan. I think it's unfortunate. And I think, it almost seems a shame to say, what's the harm in a president's speech?
I wish when I was
with children, I think the president should be given the opportunity.
Governor Pawlenty of Minnesota, Harold, said, look, the only issue with this is it was uninvited. There's a sense that it's being kind of foisted on the schools. Is there any legitimate criticism? There were lesson plans that encouraged the students to write letters saying how they could help the president.
I traveled to Afghanistan February of 2002. We took with us letters from students in our own congressional district. I was along with seven other members of Congress to deliver to students in Afghanistan. We asked them to do it. We thought a clever and smart and interesting way for kids to connect. I wish when I was in fourth grade, the President of the United States, when I was in fourth grade, would have been 1978 or 79. Jimmy Carter was president. I wish in 82, when I was in seventh grade, Reagan would have come and said, study hard, work hard, obey your teachers. If that's bad in America today, we have worse problems than the president going into a school and speaking.
Well, here, you said it's firestorm. And we live in the age of firestorms. You know, today, this week, it's the president speaking in school. What it needs is for people to stand up and say, that's flat out stupid, okay? That's flat out stupid what you're talking about. The president of the United States addressing school children in this country to study hard, work hard, because that's the way you advance in today's global economy. And instead of that, we kind of dance around it. You know, it's flat out stupid.
You talk about Van Jones as well. You know, the fact that in this media age, what he said, by anybody's estimation, was objective to sign a petition saying the government was behind 9/11. But it goes to something that's going on in this information age.
Yeah,
because you can be a target real fast.
David, when everyone has a cell phone, everyone's a photographer. When everyone has access to YouTube, everyone's a filmmaker. And when everyone's a blogger, everyone's a newspaper. When everyone's a photographer, a newspaper, and a filmmaker, everyone else is a public figure. Tell your kids, okay? Tell your kids, okay, be careful. Every move they make is now a digital footprint. You are on candid camera. And unfortunately, the real message to young people from all of these incidents, okay, and I'm not here defending anything anyone said, but from all of these incidents is, you know, really keep yourself tight. Don't say anything controversial. Don't think anything. Don't put anything in, you know, whatever you do, just kind of smooth out all the edges. And maybe you too, you know, when you get nominated to be ambassador to Burkina Faso, you'll be able to get through it.
Well, one of the things I've been saying to the audience, because this question comes up a lot, and a lot of people will repeat back to me and take it at face value, something that they read on the internet. And my line to them is, you have to vet information. You have to test it the same way you do when you buy an automobile or when you go and buy a new flat-screen television. You read the consumer reports. You have an idea of what it's worth and what the lasting value of it is. You have to do the same thing with information, because there is so much disinformation out there that it's frightening, frankly, in a free society that depends on information to make informed decisions. And this is across the board, by the way. It's not just one side of the political spectrum or the other. It is across the board, David. And it's something that we all have to address. And it requires society and political and cultural leaders to stand up and say, this is crazy.
You know, David, pick up on Tom's point, which is the internet is an open sewer of untreated, unfiltered information, left, right, center, up, down, and requires that kind of filtering by anyone. And I always felt, you know, when modems first came out, when that was how we got connected to the internet, that every modem sold in America should actually have come with a warning from the Surgeon General that would have said, judgment not included. Okay. That you have to upload the old-fashioned way. Church, synagogue, temple, mosque, teachers, schools, you know. And too often now people say, and we've all heard it, but I read it on the internet. As if that solves the bar then, you know. And I'm afraid not.
Well, there you have what they felt about it. Interested in what you have to say. The phone number to call in is 347-633-9700, and the show ID 686060, as we're trying this with Blog Talk Radio today, just to see how well it works out. And we're curious to see what you have to say. So we want to have you be a part of this conversation, and hopefully we'll do better. We already have a little bit of problem with the audio quality of the very first part of this broadcast, but we're still working out the kinks. One of the other people that was chiming in was the education secretary. He was on CBS's Face the Nation on this Sunday, and here's a little bit of what Bob Schieffer had to say.
President Obama was looking for someone to run the education department. He did not
excited
have to
about
look far. He picked Arne Duncan, who had compiled an impressive record of achievement as head of the schools in Obama's hometown of Chicago. Mr. Secretary, welcome to you this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity.
The president's planning to speak to the nation's school children Tuesday by C-SPAN and the internet, and I think it's fair to say the White House was blindsided by the reaction that's blown up. A real firestorm. Conservatives are in a rage. Glenn Beck spoke for many of the talk show people when he said, these are his words, they are capturing your kids, stand guard, America, your republic is under attack. Jim Greer, the chair of the Florida Republican Party, complained that taxpayer dollars are being used to spread President Obama's socialist ideology. Even one of the usually moderate voices in the Republican Party, Tim Pawlenty, the governor of Minnesota, said it is disruptive. I don't think he needs to force it upon the nation's school children. I guess my question to you, Mr. Secretary, what is going on?
It's been pretty interesting, but the president's whole message is about personal responsibility and challenging students to take their education very, very seriously. And we have some important goals for the country. We want to see more high-performing schools. We want to see more students improving their academic achievement. We want to see more students going to college and succeeding in graduating. None of those things happen. It's impossible if students aren't working hard every single day. And it's amazing to me, the last time a president spoke to the nation's children was in 1991. The real question I have is, why has it been 18 years since a president has addressed our nation's youth? And schools can do this. They can not do it. They can watch it during the school day. Children could watch it at home with their families. They could watch it a month from now. They could never watch it. It's purely voluntary. But I think all the drama, all the hoopla, at the end of the day, the president motivates one C student to become a B student, one B student to become an A student, or one student who's thinking about dropping out to stay in school and take their education seriously, it's all worth it.
What about we hear that some parents are going to keep their kids at home.
Yeah. Again, that's just silly. They can go to school, they can not watch. It's just, you know, going to be, you know, 18-minute speech, and so that just doesn't make any sense.
And I understand you have decided now to make the text of the speech public tomorrow.
Text will be available tomorrow on the White House website, and people can look. And again, this is all about the president challenging our young people to take responsibility for their education. We can have the hardest working teachers, we can have the best textbooks, we can have the most modern buildings. If students aren't committing to work hard every day, to have a good work ethic, to set goals, to really aspire to something, it's all for naught.
And you're not going to cancel, the president's not going to cancel the speech.
Oh, no, sir.
There was one question that I did have in some of the study materials that you sent out to some of the schools to accompany this. At one point, they suggested they write letters to the president about how they could help him. I understand you have changed the wording in that.
This was guys who were put out by teachers for teachers, and there's one that wasn't worded quite correctly. It was talking about helping the president hit his goal of having the highest percent of college graduates by 2020. He's drawn a line on the sand in that. We just clarify that to say write a letter about your own goals and what you're going to do to achieve those goals. So again, it's really about personal responsibility and being accountable, setting real goals, and having the work ethic to see them through.
Were you surprised at this reaction?
It's the kind of things I frankly don't pay any attention to. We have major problems. We have major challenges in this country, Bob. We have more homeless students than we've ever had, and we have teachers and social workers and counselors working so hard to bring them into school and keep them there, and I want to thank them for that effort. We have a dropout rate that's staggering. 30% of our students don't graduate from high school. That's 1.2 million students every single year, ninth graders that don't complete 12th grade. We have to educate our way to a better economy. This is about global competitiveness. So I don't spend any time on the silly stuff. I try and stay laser-like focused on really dramatically improving what's going on for our nation's children.
So there you have it. It's silly stuff, I guess, if you question the administration. And reporters seem to believe that as well, as you heard from the Meet the Press panel. It's interesting. This is an era where we are trying to get parents more involved in our schools. We're trying to get parents more interested in what their kids are doing. And when some parents reach out and they actually do contact their school district and they say to their school district, hey, hold on a second, this is something that I've looked into and I don't want my kids to be a part of it, and suddenly it's silly stuff. Curious what you have to say. We have a phone line. It is available for you at 347-633-9700. Our show ID is 686-060, and we really want you to be a part of this, so I encourage you to join in. You can also go to the chat room and log in, Iowa News One chat room, and we'll also take questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, all of the above, as we do this new experimental version of The Political Geek, which will be via Blog Talk Radio. And hopefully soon we'll be adding video to this as well, so stay tuned for that. The other issue, let's first of all go to the This Week panel, and I believe this is the this is what they had to say about this whole issue. We'll
from the heart of the nation's capital, This Week.
Okay, so I didn't edit this one.
Chief Washington correspondent George Stephanopoulos, live from the Newseum on Pennsylvania Avenue.
And as the president enjoys the final day of his summer break, we begin with one of his closest confidants, White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs. Welcome back,
George. Thanks for having me,
Robert. And I want to get to health care, but we've got to begin with this news that came in overnight. Van Jones, the president's green job czar, at about 12:12 a.m., he resigned. At least that's when we're notified of his resignation. He says he is the victim of a vicious smear campaign, saying people are using lies and distortions to distract and divide the country. As you know, he's come under fire for past statements and actions. Does the president believe that he's the victim of a vicious smear campaign, or does he believe that Jones's actions and words merited resignation?
Well, what Van Jones decided was that the agenda of this president was bigger than any one individual. The president thanks Van Jones for his service in the first 8 months and helping to coordinate renewable energy jobs that are going to lay the foundation for our future economic growth.
But did the president want him to go?
Well, the president and the CEQ accepted his resignation because Van Jones, as he says in his statement, understood that he was going to get in the way of the president and ultimately this country moving forward on something as important as creating jobs in a clean energy economy.
So the president doesn't endorse in any way the things that Van Jones said before, the things he did?
He doesn't, but he thanks him for his service to the country.
Let's move on to health care. We're going to see Robert Dole, the former Senate Majority Leader, in a minute, part of our debate. And he said this week that the president, in order to get a fresh start on health care, has to introduce his own specific plan, his own legislation on health care. That's the way to get things started. Is that what the president's going to do?
Well, George, I think if viewers for ABC and everybody else tune in to hear the president at 8 o'clock on Wednesday night, they'll leave that speech knowing exactly where the president stands, exactly what he thinks we have to do to get health care done, health care reform done this year, and he intends to do
it. And what he won't accept as well?
Well, we prefer to outline the positive rather than the negative, but I'm sure he will draw some lines in the sand on that.
But how about this question about about legislation? Because there has been some talk about that the president will actually draft legislative language. Is that what's happening right now?
Well, look, we've been looking at legislative language for months. You have now several different proposals in the House and the Senate that have made their way through the committee process. Obviously, the Senate Finance Committee continues to work. So you're going to have ideas that come at this from a couple of different directions, and the president has to take all those strands and pull them together.
So he will do that, and then he'll put his ideas on the table.
We're going to certainly, I think, as I said, people will leave that speech knowing where he stands. If it takes doing whatever to get health care done, the president's ready, willing, and able to go do that. We are closer, George, than we've ever been before. In ensuring that we get some genuine insurance reforms that don't let insurance companies discriminate against pre-existing conditions, that we cut costs for families and small business and provide some accessibility to the tens of millions.
You just identified the relatively non-controversial portions of the plan that have some bipartisan.
And, yeah, that's one thing that's interesting is he's dwelt on the things that really not too many people are saying are bad. And in fact, the insurance company has said it's not bad. They've agreed themselves to submit themselves to legislation that would mandate that they no longer put the pre-existing conditions clause into operation, that they don't refuse the coverage for those who can't who have transferred jobs or transferred insurance, what have you, and need to have the coverage to have the ability to be, shall we say, covered. What am I saying? Gosh, it's a Sunday night. I could be watching Jerry Lewis. Instead, here I am. Here I am sitting here talking to you about what's going on in the world. It's been an interesting time. The healthcare debate is still continuing. We're still hearing a lot of clamor from all sides, and I wanted to take just a minute to kind of go on to something that has been bothering me for a while, and I haven't said it in any medium, so I thought I would bring it to you here. And this is still a work in progress, and hopefully we'll be able to expand upon this. And if you have things that you want to expand upon in what I say, please do so. We want you to be a part of the conversation. And again, in order to get a hold of us, it's pretty simple. Actually, getting a hold of us is just a matter of calling in. The phone line is 347-633-9700 and the show ID 686060. And that's all it takes. We also have a chat room that's available for you as well. This I've entitled, Why the Loud Voices? You know, it's a question that nobody really asks. Instead, we see the images of angry Americans in the face of their congressman or congresswoman in the town hall meetings over health care legislation moving through the House and the Senate. Now, instead of focusing on the anger, let's focus on why those people are so angry. By now, it should be apparent to any rational American that Nancy Pelosi and President Obama are just dead wrong when they claim that those who turn out at these meetings are just puppets of special interest groups. These are people that may have gotten an email from a special interest group telling them about the time and the location of the meetings, but they weren't bussed in. The parking lots of these meetings, they were full of cars, as were the streets around them. The anger and the frustration that they expressed really wasn't read from a printed card or from a web page. It was real. Now, perhaps the reason that President Obama and Speaker Pelosi seem so blindsided by all of this is it's the antithesis of the way their party operates. The Democratic Party's won so many of its victories by getting their special interest groups, the labor unions and trial lawyers, to bus people in to vote or to attend an event and getting them there by uttering half-truths about the opposition. They're used to that. They're blind to real community organization. The people that are attending these town hall meetings are not AstroTurf. They're the real deal. Now, people are upset because of several things, Mr. President and Speaker Pelosi. Mr. President, you were elected because you promised to change the way things are done in Washington. Instead, people who gave you a chance because of that promise see that Washington's operating the same as before. You've appointed not the most qualified people to your top positions, but political cronies. The only change is that instead of former President Bush's conservative cronies, they're your liberal cronies. No change, just the status quo with a different party name stamped on it. People see the managers, directors, and heads of federal agencies as merely payback jobs, and when they do, it decreases trust in those agencies. Browning at FEMA did more to turn Americans against cronyism than it did to President Bush's reputation. Now your party's in power. You're supposed to be better. You're supposed to pick the best of the best, but we're not seeing that. We see your friends and political contributors getting the plum jobs. And the Van Jones of the world, who got the job because he was a radical. You promised transparency in government, but the only thing Americans can see is the fact that the Democratic leadership in Congress insists on passing 1,000-page bills without discussion, without any public comment. Every piece of legislation you recommend must be passed right away, Mr. President. This isn't what Americans want. The only lasting changes that have happened in the federal government have occurred after long debate and trial programs to see what works and what doesn't. It's the hastily passed programs that fail and consume hundreds of millions of dollars because the special interest groups that attach themselves to them fight tooth and nail to ensure they never will end. One of the best cost-cutting moves of the 20th century was welfare reform that President Clinton got passed into law. What you may have forgotten, Mr. President, is that before welfare reform was codified, the Clinton administration allowed states to have waivers of federal rules so they could experiment and they could find the most worthwhile programs. For example, Iowa and Wisconsin did that, and they had one of the most successful programs in the country. Most of their successful experiment was codified into the rules that now govern welfare. Now, that's how to do it. Try many things and keep only the successful. Not try one thing and keep dumping money in it to try and prop it up, which is what we're doing now. You promised to change the tone in Washington, Mr. President. The tone didn't change. When Speaker Pelosi and other Democrats call citizens with concerns who take the time to travel to these town hall meetings AstroTurf and accuse them of carrying swastikas, when I've only seen one sign like that at these events, and it was a swastika with a not symbol through it, that's not change. That's more the same with a different party doing the accusations. I'm sure the liberals didn't like anti-war protesters being called anti-American. Well, now it's up to your party not to retaliate, but to demonstrate the way to engage in civil debate over our problems. It's definitely not change when your staff encourages your supporters to tell on people who disagree with you. To older Americans, this smacks of Richard Nixon's enemies list, and it's not a change to the better side of politics. In a day when cybersecurity is one of our biggest concerns, it's not proper for the White House to use email lists from your activist allies that you haven't vetted to send out your own community organizing emails to get attendance at town hall meetings. That aside, it's also not endearing to hear you attack special interests for scaring people so they'll go to the town hall meetings when your own White House is doing the same, Mr. President. That's exactly what the emails are saying. Democrats all over the U.S. ran for re-election and election, promising to go back to the Clinton era, where the federal budget was balanced and an end to the deficit was in reach. Instead, we saw the first acts of Congress and the President to commit to spending more money than the United States has spent since the time of Jefferson and Washington. Why the loud voices? Maybe it's because people have lost their faith in government. Maybe it's because you haven't delivered, and it's not a piece of legislation that you have to deliver upon. You have to deliver on what the American people expect you to deliver on. And that's your promises. well, no politician ever delivers completely on their promises. Well, not necessarily true. Not necessarily true at all. We are encouraging you to be a part of this. Again, our phone number is 347-633-9700. Our show ID is 686-090. And I do believe we have at least one caller on the air, or one caller on the line. Let's go to the caller and see what you have to say. Hi, you're on the Political Geek.
This is the Boogeyman. How are you doing?
Good.
And happy Labor Day, by the way. Happy Labor Day weekend.
Yes, sir.
I couldn't agree with you more. He pretty much came in and did pretty much the opposite of what he campaigned on. Let me first statement.
That's the biggest thing that bothers me, is that if you're going to campaign on something, then darn it, you better do it. I never saw in Obama's campaign that they were going to push through mandatory health care. And yet, suddenly, we're in that mode. Instead, what he promised was transparency, and I guess nowadays, the way you fulfill your promises is you put up a website. And that's what they've done. That's it. That's all there is a website.
He was too transparent. A lot of stuff that was behind back doors and special guys coming in. What about the transparency? Remember the bill, right? They're supposed to have like 24 hours or 48 hours, and they go out on CNN or whatever, or sorry, C-SPAN. Now they don't read the bills anymore. Actually, probably did that before, but the first thing was Pelosi went and she released it, I think, 24 hours, and they had like...
They had a speed reader come in and read the bill because one of the Republicans wanted to delay the bill, and there happens to be a provision that says that you can require that the entire bill be read, and it had hundreds of almost 1,000 pages. So they had a speed reader come in and read through the bill. And
did you know there were four copies for the House and four copies for the Senate of that bill? I called up Austin in Texas. There were four copies for the House and four copies for the Senate. But that whole, the final, what I mean, where they didn't read it, and actually they couldn't really read it because they didn't have copies to read, except the speed reader, you know.
Well, I spent a lot of years as a legislative reporter covering politics in Iowa, and the state of Iowa has a state-run telephone company, basically, the state-run fiber optics network. It got passed in this same kind of way, where... And it was a Republican governor who got in collusion with a Democrat and with a guy who wanted to start his own fiber optic company, basically. And in the middle of the night, they introduced this multi-million-dollar amendment, tacked it onto a bill. It was one of the last days of the legislative session, and people just kind of, you know, half awake, raised their hand and said, "Aye." And then suddenly we started reading it. We found out this was going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars. And right now, the price tag is several billion worth of dollars. And even what they started out to do with it, it's outdated. It was outdated about 3 years after it was put in place. Because originally it was going to be video classrooms. Now it's just internet service for all of the state agencies and libraries. But... you know, you and I don't get the benefit from that. If you're in the state of Iowa, you don't get anything out of that. But yet, billions of dollars have gone to it. And the same thing's happening with the federal government. It's craziness. And that's where we've got to do something to take that back. We've got to demonstrate that our loud voices are out there for a reason. They're not just out there because we're somehow angry taxpayers and we're mad about everything because we've been fired up by talk radio. We're mad for a reason. And that's why I was saying, why the loud voices? They want to just say, oh, you're a bunch of angry people and you've been stirred up by some talk show host or whatever. I think we're more intelligent than that. And I think that the thing that...
I agree with you. I agree 100% in every way. People are... The people were selling Bob's bill, okay? Well, they really didn't know the bill because... there are like four or five different ones out there, right? So what they're selling, they really didn't know what they're talking about because they haven't seen it yet, the full bill. You're still right. I mean, people are upset probably for quite a few reasons, you know. They like the bill, but, you know, Washington is just gone. berserk. As far as I think abuse of power or overreaching the Obama administration, at least because he's in power now, you know. So they're frustrated, and they're voicing their opinions. So I understand what they're doing too.
You're right. And part two of that is that members of Congress, whether in the Senate or the House, some of them have been in there so long that they're numb to what goes on anymore. They rely on what the staff and the party tells them they're to do. If Speaker Pelosi tells someone to go to the bathroom, I have a feeling they probably go to the bathroom because they don't read what they're doing. They rely on their congressional staffs, and the congressional staffs then, you know, what happens is the Speaker Pelosi's of the world get the congressional staffs all pumped up so that they believe and think one way, and then the members of Congress go right in line because they follow what their staff says. And if you don't believe me, there's a book out there. It's probably out of print, but if you can get it in the library, it's called Hill Rat by John Jayne, I believe it is.
These guys have been so long.
Yeah.
That they're out of touch with reality, like real people. And like you say, they sign stuff. We know now for a fact they'd actually come out and say, hey, we don't read the bills. We just don't do it. Not movies came out. It's beyond me. But you're right. Some of these people are entrenched so far in there, like Pelosi and quite a few others, on both sides of the aisle, not just one, both sides of the aisle, they don't see reality anymore. They see what they want to see, or they see where the people pay them for to put it in there, you know? The corporate business and stuff. You're right. They don't see the assets from the regular person. They know they've got a job, right, no matter what. Pelosi will have a job in San Francisco for quite a while.
Well, that's the thing that's amazing to me, and I've done talk radio before, and the one thing that I've always said to people is, if somebody would call in to complain about a politician, I'd say, well, did you vote in the last election? And they say, well, no. And I said, sorry, you don't have a say. Because if you didn't take the time to vote, you don't have a say. Because if you didn't care, you allowed that to happen. And that's what we've got to quit doing.
I'm with you 100%. I have that same thing. If you don't vote, you don't have the right to complain. That's my policy. Because I mean, you know, like you say, you know, if you're upset, whatever, but you didn't care enough to vote against it back whenever, then, you know, sorry, you know, because you could have said something against it. You could have, even if you voted for that person, you could say, you know, what's up, you know, what's going on here? And yeah, if you don't vote, you don't got the right to complain to myself, especially if you stay home on purpose because, let's say, they're upset with their party or however they go. Well, vote against that person, you know. But
exactly.
If you stay home and do nothing, the politician care less. Actually, a person stays home and does nothing is probably a politician's best friend or someone doesn't like. Hey, they care less what you say because they know you're not going to vote.
Well,
you know?
And that's the reason why you'll see a flood of polls that come out right before the election that are designed to take one party or the other's people and say and make them think, well, I don't need to turn out. You know, the election's in the bag, so I don't have to. But I'm going to take what I just said and kick it up one notch, because I think in the congressional elections that are coming up, I think in every election that happens from here on out, we have to do more than just vote ourselves. What we have to do is our own brand of community organizing. That means that I've got to find people that are like-minded, that believe we need to take this country back and get back to basic freedoms and the small L libertarian concept that the government needs to stay out of my pocketbook as much as possible and provide the basic services. And then we got to bring those people to the poll. So if each one of us brought one person that we knew was going to vote out the Nancy Pelosi's and the Obama supporters out there, all of the people like Barney Frank and all of that group, then things would change. But unless we can do that, we're going to have to start our own community organization.
I tell people, you know, don't just vote, show up at their offices, you know. Don't call, show up there. I do all the time. I'm very active in this type of thing, you know, because a lot of people don't vote and say, hey, you know, that's it, or they won't vote, period. And they're pissed off because the person, you know, didn't do like they wanted, were upset with it, but they couldn't vote against the person. Yeah, I mean, I call it my senators. I've called the White House up. I mean, but I'll walk into my senator's office. You know, my counsel are the best because they can't run away from you, you know. They can go to Washington. But, yeah, I say go on in there and give them peace of mind. Because, remember, they weren't feeding us the way around. If you just stay home or upset so you don't vote, whatever, well, they don't care.
No.
Why should they care? So look from their perspective, okay? I got this person who's complaining left and right, okay? But when time comes to vote again, he's going to stay home. So they could probably care less about you because you're not going to do nothing. You know, against reform. So why should they care about you?
Yeah, and the way that we can be successful in this is if you then get one or two of your friends to do the same thing as you, and they get one or two of their friends. It's the old thing we used to have in church, each one reach one. Remember that? When the minister used to say, go out and get somebody and bring them to church. Well, it's the same thing with politics. If each person goes out and gets one person, before you know it, we've got an army of people that are all in sync, all saying the same thing, looking the congressman, looking their senator, looking the president in the eye and saying, you work for us. You pay attention to us. And they have to listen to that.
You're right. They got to listen to you, too. They don't have a choice. They're supposed to listen to you.
And
but
we
you're
have,
right. But,
and we have
but,
to do it.
Yeah,
we have to do it in a...
But you know, a lot of people, like I say, that they'll complain. I think conservatives got played this time around because a lot of conservatives stayed home because they were happy with the party, you know? There's some sort of crazy move where they think, we'll stay home, right? And that way they'll punish our party. And Obama felt so bad, correctly, that somehow we'll reignite and get regenerated. I don't know. I understand myself. But Taylor's people, I said, well, I mean, you could have voted against him, you know? It was a very slim margin that he won by people all over. It had the same people, I saw the same, by independent research, had the same people had the vote for Bush, okay? You know, Bush had last time around. Had the same turnout came as far as Republicans. With the crossover vote, you know, the poor vote, it would have put McCain over on the popular vote.
It would have. I think John McCain shot himself in the foot, though, quite honestly, because those of us who are fiscal conservatives lost all hope. I mean, we kind of at one point in time when he promised to suspend his campaign and go work on the problem with the banking crisis, and then all he did was a photo opportunity where he made some phone calls and then capitulated with everybody else on the bailout. That's not what we expected. We expected somebody who would stick in there, who would say, you know, who would be our voice and not agree to anything unless it was the right thing and not just do something to push it out of the way until after the election, which is exactly what he was trying to do. And I think that turned a lot of people away. But you're right. It did indeed give Barack Obama the push that he needed, and we are paying for it now. So I think what we've got to do is we've got to take that back now. We've got to realize we made a mistake and fix it, which we do in America.
For whatever reason, a lot of people stay at home. I don't know why. They have some sort of game plan, whatever. But anybody, Democrat, Republican, I don't care. You know, if you didn't have enough mocks to come out and actually vote this guy or against him, I mean, I didn't vote for him. I'm a Democrat, and I crossed over this time around. You know, I support Hillary, but I crossed over, you know, as far as the general election, because I knew, hey, this guy could be trouble, in my opinion. I didn't want him in there. But if you don't vote against the guy, anybody, you know, big or small, you know, politicians, and that guy does a crappy job or doesn't do something you like, well, let's just say you're a person, okay, and you didn't vote against Obama, right? You stayed home on purpose, all right, hypothetical. And he passes some crazy bill, right, that's really against you. Well, hey, you know what? You deserve it.
Yeah.
And you could have made a difference and voted against the guy, you know? But
you
no,
could,
I mean,
you could have. And I think we need to take that and the anger that we have, and we need to be forceful with our leaders to let them know that we don't agree with them. We don't need to be angry. I was hearing in the water cooler talk that there was one of the meetings where someone got a finger bitten off. That's not what we need, but it was not bitten off by someone opposed to Obamacare. It was bitten off by one of the SEIU union guys. That's another story. But the fact is, we need to be vocal. We need to be respectful. We need to be powerful. And the way that we be powerful is we do it in numbers. So everybody that's going to listen to this needs to grab someone else, and the next election, if somebody gives you an excuse about, well, I can't go vote, whatever, get them an absentee ballot. Make sure they fill out that ballot and they mail it in.
It's not like it's hard. Yeah, I mean,
no,
there's no really excuse. You can get absentee ballot, you know, or, I mean, it's not
so
hard.
It's so easy to vote nowadays.
You get absentee ballot, you can vote, what do you call it? It's got, what's it called when you can vote, ahead of time, not the election day.
Well, a lot of states will allow you to. They'll have these satellite voting stations, and you can vote either. And it's an absentee ballot, basically. You just fill out an absentee ballot, and they store. Excuse me, they store it away.
Early voting. We'll talk about early voting. Okay,
yeah.
In Texas, for what week or so, two for the actual day. Okay, you can vote. You know, and that way, if you can't make it that day, there's no reason not to vote. I mean, because. In fact, a lot of states, all states, they have what we call early voting, you know, where you can go and vote, you know, the same as the general election, the same people, but you'll get done ahead. You won't. So, you know, there's no real reason to not vote. I mean, I guess there's certain reasons, like if you like for a hospital, you know, but no, there's no reason not to vote. You can go and vote. I mean, you call them up, and they'll bring you out a ballot.
Yeah,
you know, if you go to any campaign, okay, I work for Hillary's campaign, all right. And if you call them up, says I'm going to vote Hillary, okay, in San Antonio, but I ain't got a ride out there. Can you get me out there? They'll send someone out there, pick you up,
yep.
Take you at the poll.
Yeah.
I guarantee you. And the other ones would too. I was in the governor campaign. Sorry, in the mayoral campaign in San Antonio, okay. They would have done the same thing. Say, hey, you know what? I can't make it out there, but you send a person out there to pick me up. You'd have a ride out there in no time. So they'll set you up 90 days for employment.
And I really think, and that's where that you hear about Acorn, you hear about all these stories. What they do is they get absentee votes. They're out there making sure that they call all of the absentee votes that are going to be in their favor, by hook or by crook sometimes, but they make sure that they get all the people that are going to be in their favor. And they gather those votes up so they don't have to worry about those people. Then they go work on the other people that are marginal and try to bring them in at the last minute. So what you do, what we've got to do is we've got to bring all of our friends and get them all to vote early so our votes are in there. Then we start to work on the people that have been sitting on the fence that maybe voted for Obama and the Democrats because they promised to be conservatives. And now we're seeing they're not conservatives. So we work on those people. We make sure that they understand that we mean business, and, you know, maybe just...
Like, you guys, well, this is what they do. Do you remember during the election, okay, where the Acorn or someone, I guess, or they registered the entire Dallas Cowboys starting line in Nevada?
Yeah.
It was Acorn for you, or it was a branch of Acorn or something. They were being investigated by the FBI. Ohio was a joke. They changed it up so you could go... vote on the same day you registered, and basically not showing proof of where you lived or anything. And they had people linked to bars and stuff, and that was the biggest fraud in who knows how long.
Well, that's kind of the Chicago brand of politics. We're about out of time on this on the podcast. Appreciate you calling in and talking to me. It's been fun talking with you.
You got a good show there. You got an excellent show. I hope you do another one, Michael.
All righty. Thank you very much. Well, that's going to wrap it up for the broadcast this time. And again, what I think I want everybody to take away is we need to not focus on the anger that we might have, but focus on why we're so angry and let the politicians know why we're angry. I'm Gary Barrett. This is The Political Geek. Thank you for being with
90
us.
90 seconds.
We really appreciate you being a part of this. And as you heard, I have 90 seconds in which to wrap this up. But we're going to invite you to join me. I'm on Twitter as Iowa News 1, and I'm also at iowapoliticsexposed.blogspot.com. blogspot.com. I'll learn how to talk tonight. Thank you for being with us.